This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Clemson. Yeah, LSU, Clemson. Like, yeah. I mean, there's the teams that are competing for hardware and championships, like, they don't care about a 10-win season. So if I'm an NC State fan, or if I'm, like, you know, within that NC State program, and now we very, very quickly move our focus. We don't spend time beating our chest about having a 10-win season, especially with everyone coming back. And we should show up with every bit of the expectation that we can compete for an ACC championship in 2022.
Chip Patterson, who will be with us in just a few minutes. I am Adam Gold. This is the Adam Gold Show from ACC kickoff in Charlotte. We don't kick off yet. We don't kick off for another, 6 weeks? Is it 6 weeks?
Well, week zero is what, August 27th?
Don't talk to me about week zero.
Okay, well.
There's no such thing as a week zero.
Well, Phillips referred to it.
I know.
UNC plays somebody as a practice.
Well, yeah, they have but it's an official game.
It's a practice.
We should have practice games.
Yeah,
we should. They should have a practice game. I don't think there's any question about that.
You know, there's always a conversation about strength of schedule and all that stuff, because a lot of Power 5 schools will play a FCS school.
Sure.
And it's a money thing for the FCS schools.
Yes, it is. And it's an automatic win.
It's an automatic win. Right. Okay, I get it, because you want to boost your record.
It's a practice. No, it's really just a practice.
Well, yeah, it is. But, okay, you get a win, so now you can sit there and say you had 8 wins as opposed to 7 or whatever it may be.
Right.
But that's really at the end of the year what it is. But maybe still pay those teams and just count it as a scrimmage
game. As an exhibition game.
As an exhibition.
Yeah. It doesn't work as well for the FCS schools.
Yeah,
if it's not an actual game. But I'm just saying that, like, at some point you have to, even though Jim Phillips wants to consider the entire community,
yeah,
at some point you have to consider number one. Like, what is it? What is best for you as a school, mm-hmm. you as a league? Those games, to me, are really just filler. And I get why it's all of the – why coaches do that, why coaches say – you know, it's good for these schools, and it is good for those schools, but it might also be to your detriment. We need to get those games off the schedule, because, frankly, those games are unattractive watches.
Yeah.
Right? No offense to Gardner Webb. It's not a game we want to watch. That's just the bottom line.
Yep.
It is simply not a game that we want to watch. We need more good games on television. A lot of people, when they talk about Boston College football, they think offensive linemen. They think Luke Kuechly. We certainly do here, especially as we're in Charlotte. Or they think running backs. Maybe BC is more quarterback university. I don't know. We had the Hasselbecks. We had Matt Ryan. Right? There have been plenty. Phil Jakovich, you're a tall guy from Pittsburgh. We had Kenny Pickett, the Pittsburgh guy.
He's a New Jersey guy, though.
Oh, that's right. He's a New Jersey guy. Do Pittsburgh people look down on Jersey people? I'm just kidding. I'm a Jersey guy. Thank you very much for sitting down. BC football. It's got a history of being so much better than people talk about. How do you change that perspective?
Well, I think there have been a lot of great players that have come from Boston College who have succeeded in the NFL, but they haven't necessarily had the great seasons in BC history. So I think what it takes is putting it together and having a run of multiple years where you're winning 9, 10 plus games.
Right. Well, there 9 and 10, that's a pretty lofty number. Well, it was a loftier number back in the day, but, you know, the Matt Ryan era, there were 9 and 10. But Tom O'Brien won 8, 9 games just about every year. When Jeff Jagosinski was there for 2 years, they were 9 and 10 win seasons. Like, the down years have been 7 win seasons. It just seems like people don't give that BC football that kind of credit. Tell me what the feeling is going into this season among your program.
We're really excited. We think we have the team to compete with everybody on our schedule. So it's going to be a tough season. Like, there are a lot of good matchups, but we're ready to go. We're ready to go for this camp. We have a lot of skill position guys coming back in the offense. And then on the O-line, a lot of guys that are ready to step up.
I mentioned it before. Offensive lineman, defensive lineman university too. You guys are notorious for having great lines of scrimmage. You missed Phil Jakovich is sitting with us here at Operation Kickoff. You missed a good chunk of the middle of the season last year. Came back and you nearly engineered the comeback against FSU. Walk me through that as you were coming back. As I was watching that game, going, they're going to do this. They're gonna come all the way back. Walk me through that, and I know Zay Flowers played a big role.
Specifically that game or just coming back?
Just, you can go wherever you want with it, but I was specifically talking about that game.
Okay. Well, yeah, just coming back. I wasn't 100% healthy, but the doctor said that my bone was healed, so the risk of re-injury was pretty much null. So I wanted to come back. I was itching to play.
Right.
And, you know, so – I was playing a little handicapped, but even with that, we still have such great players that just trying to get the ball to Zay and our playmakers to work it out. We had a chance to beat Florida State at the end.
Yes. I literally thought you guys were coming back. It was, you scored the last, 2 touchdowns, 17 points of the game, 26-23 loss. How good is Zay?
He's so good. When he has the ball in his hand, he is the hardest guy to tackle. I think he's the shiftiest player I've seen in college football.
Phil Jakovich is joining us here. This is a league that is stocked with so many good quarterbacks. Is there a relationship? Do you have a relationship with any of the guys around the league?
Yeah, I've gotten to meet a decent amount of them. Just being at different camps like the Manning Passing Academy, I've gotten to meet some of them.
All right. Actually, we were talking to Devin Leary a little bit ago. He was at the Passing Academy. Do you guys have kind of a rapport?
Yeah, definitely. I just met him this past year, but got to hang out with him, guys like Sam and Brennan. So it was really cool.
There's so many good quarterbacks in the league. I know there were arguments last year. Why wasn't this guy in the top three or this guy in the top three? I think Devin Leary finished fifth in quarterback voting. He had a great year. I mean, you would have certainly been on that list had you played a full season. What was it like sitting out for you as you're fighting to get back on the field? What was that like?
It was terrible. We had high hopes for the season, and the second game, second possession, just fall on my wrist weird, and so I'm out. It was really rough watching the team play without me, but I tried to come back at the end at that point that – the season we had already lost a decent amount.
No, there's – I mean, I don't think your record indicates what kind of a team you guys have, and you have the line of scrimmage pretty much, solidified, again, on both sides of the ball. Head quarterback Phil Jakovich is joining us here. What has Coach Hafley brought to this program and the enthusiasm and the winning tradition that he has been a part of? What has that meant?
Oh, that's been everything. That's why I came. And he's really established a culture of excellence. It hasn't shown or paid off like we'd like it to yet, but he's really set it up for success in the future. And I think his knowledge of the game, especially defense, is huge. You know, he's not a coach that's just going to be a political guy. He's going to be standoffish, you know. He gets in the nitty-gritty, and he's out there coaching.
Is he fun?
Oh, yeah. No, he keeps it fun and loose, and that's what I love about him because he understands that if you're playing not to lose, you can't reach your full potential.
How have past quarterbacks at BC helped you, whether it's the Hasselbecks, who I know love their school? We've talked to Tim about it, Matt Rye. How have any of these guys helped you?
I've gotten to talk with them a little bit. I'd like to talk to Matt Ryan some and also the Hasselbecks, but just from their example of their play, I think it's something I try to emulate. So that's been the biggest thing.
Phil Jakovich, BC quarterback. I thank you very much for your time. They're ushering you to another table. This is a day for you. So I appreciate what you've done.
Thank you.
All right, take care. All right, when we come back, Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com. He will join us, and we'll talk about what Jim Phillips had to say and some of the things that I believe haven't and won't be talked about enough that just kind of went unsaid. But I think with Jim Phillips was getting to a future, and the ACC might be okay. Talk to Chip Patterson about that next. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We're talking retirement and coach. I'm a simple guy, but I like colors. Tell me how I can color code money and get ready for retirement.
I like colors too. I like pictures. Colors. I like graphs. I don't like just a bunch of words. And so what we try to do is we try to break down all those words on your statement, all those numbers into three colors, red, green, yellow. People are amazed when they come in, and most of their money is in the red category.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Now, red means high horsepower potential. It also means high loss potential. So you have to, it's a give and take. You can be willing to do that or that. Yellow means liquid money. You can get it any time. It's not going to earn anything. Green gives you safe growth, but also gives you lifetime income. As we get closer to retirement, we need some green accounts. We need the green zone, we call it. In Baghdad, green zone was important. Green zone's important for you, too. The next 10 people, Adam, it's a $1,000 value. Golden ticket we're going to put together for you, your very own total plan that has a green zone.
It's a traffic light. I hope it's green for you. 800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. The Adam Gold Show live, ACC football kickoff. I am Adam Gold. Dennis Cox is here. We have Graham, the new guy, back on the ones and twos in our studios in Raleigh, making sure that we stay on the air. We'll hear more from the commissioner of the ACC, Jim Phillips, coming up at the top of the hour. Wall of Sound will be a whole bunch of stuff from Jim Phillips on the state of the ACC. This was the state of the ACC address. He only filibustered for 20 minutes about sports other than football. We finally got the word kickoff, the first reference to anything that resembles football, 20 minutes in. But a lot of that is, we could say that it's a deflection, but it's certainly something that we should have all been used to by now, not with Phillips. John Swofford did the same thing.
Yeah.
They like the Atlantic Coast Conference is the league that lauds its academics. I get more email from the league based on academic honors than anything else.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. It's college. I get it. And we're in a room full of sports writers. And these folks are all interested in how are you going to bridge the revenue gap. They don't care about chemistry class.
No.
They just don't. They just don't. And that's right. It's fine.
By the way, I coined that term filibuster.
Filibuster. But here's the thing. He was not unlike anybody. Like, wasn't unlike John Swofford. I mean, I've been to SEC Media Day. They probably don't. They probably just go, we won another national championship on the football field. We had X amount of teams. We had both teams in the championship game. That's the way it goes. Because, honestly, that's what's the most important. The other stuff all matters, right? The ACC just highlighting the differences of the conference. But one of the things that Jim Phillips talked about, what he alluded to, was the relationship between the league and ESPN. And how does the ACC get to the point where they are going to be able to, I mean, I don't know if that you can renegotiate, but you can get creative and maybe develop another revenue stream. And here's where I would be going. And I think we were talking about this earlier with Brian Murphy, right? WRAL sports investigative reporter. Would ESPN, because there are so many games, and some of those games don't even go on ESPN. Some of the games are internet exclusives. Yeah. Some of the games go out to the RSNs. Are you a YouTube TV?
I am.
I'm a YouTube TV subscriber as well. So if Carolina and BC, I'll just throw out that matchup.
Yeah.
If that matchup is relegated to an RSN, I can't watch it.
Yep.
Right? Which, in some ways, thank you.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. I don't have to see that on my channel.
In some ways, look, I can't watch it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But could the ACC get permission from ESPN to take a package of games and push it to another network, not an RSN, and to create more revenue? Is that one way that the ACC could get more games?
A network buying content off of another network.
Yeah, which is sort of what the RSNs do. I just don't know how lucrative, how much that is. So that is just one thing that Jim Phillips talked about. Or he didn't mention it specifically, but I thought it would be very interesting. Here's Chip Patterson. Chip Patterson is here, CBSSports.com. See, we're on TV.
Well, you're a good-looking man.
No, so. I'm not, but I'm on TV. So you are handsome. All right. Let's ignore the first 20 minutes of Jim Phillips today.
Okay.
Took him 20 minutes before he mentioned kickoff.
Right.
I knew we were finally getting to football at that point, unless he was pivoting to soccer.
So he mentioned revenue once in the first 20 minutes, and revenue was mentioned 13 times in the final 20 minutes, if you want to look at topics that are of interest to the media and not of interest to the opening statement.
Well, like, he was selling. He wanted to get all this stuff out, and it was clear that he was reading off a prepared statement. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to get all these things out about academics and healthy communities.
National championships and all of these other sports.
We talked about Head Start, which was really good. I appreciate that. Paid paternity leave, he talked about all that stuff. And then people like money.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6th, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
Impressions of Jim Phillips once we got past the prepared statement stuff.
It was... There are times when the ACC football kickoff has felt like a pep rally where you're celebrating national championships, Heisman Trophy winners, the launch of a network,
right.
And it felt like there's been a lot of backslapping probably from 2013 to 2018 or 2019. This felt more like the address that we get from an emergency services official with a storm coming in terms of, like, here's what we are going to expect. High winds, lots of rain. All options are on the table.
Right.
And it's like the ACC is looking at its house and wondering if it's going to be able to survive this storm. Are they going to take action on one of these many options that he continually said are on the table?
Right.
Or are they just going to close their eyes and pray? And some people, when a storm comes,
they do
just close their eyes and pray.
They go to the middle room of the house.
And then others decide to, you know, batten down the hatches, clear the gutters, you know, take some steps to make sure you don't have flooding under the house, check the sump pump. And that's where things like unequal revenue sharing, that's where things like talking daily, as he said with ESPN, about what the future of the conference is going to be. Because frankly, the gap is coming from media rights contracts, which therefore means your media rights partner, ESPN, is one of the only, if not the only, party that can change the money that's coming in. You can change how it's distributed. So that is one of those options that's on the table. But I would say that it's encouraging to know that they are talking daily. It'd be way scarier if he was like, we hadn't talked in a while.
Yeah, I haven't talked to Jimmy Pitaro in 2 months. By the way, that's the first mention of sump pump on the show. I just want that out there. Chip Patterson is here. All right, let's peel back that TV stuff for a second. Could there be? I don't know if you can renegotiate the number. Like the total package. I don't know if you can. Does ESPN want to go down that – do they want to start that or set that precedent where, hey, ACC needed some more cash, so we tore up the deal and wrote another deal? And by the way, in the act of tearing up that deal, do –
what does it do to the grant of rights?
Do all the schools take that opportunity and leave, right? Like, I don't think that'll happen. They'd be tearing up the deal to get a better deal. I think competitively, I think those schools are probably in the right spot. But could you do that, or do you simply have to get creative and just maybe create off of that another revenue stream?
I think that the other revenue stream that seems the most interesting is the idea that the ACC network would use some of its inventory to allow ESPN to put other college sports properties on that channel, if it would allow for more live sports, because live sports are what's going to draw the most advertising dollars. And that as much as I enjoy the rewatches and the replays of games, if there were more live sporting events on that channel, then I think it would draw more revenue. Is that just going to be incremental when we break it down on the per school per year basis? Maybe. But when there are discussions about, you know, if the ESPN is going to be in the mix for the Pac-12, it's not some sort of merger that I think some fans are hearing. It's a television programming decision to allow the ACC network to represent more than just those schools in the ACC. That is a creative way to increase revenue. Whether it is enough, I don't know, but it certainly makes sense why it might be one of those options on the table.
If Pac-12 games, maybe it's even a non-conference games between ACC schools and Pac-12 schools. What's in it for the Pac-12 in that equation?
They get more distribution than they get on the Pac-12 network.
Is there is a Pac-12 network, but it's not really tethered.
It's not available or powered. Or, I mean, it was created at this time when Larry Scott, he was like, I'm going to launch a network.
Yeah.
And you know what? We are going to build this network. It's not like the Big Ten network, which has Fox as a principal investor. It's not like the ACC or the SEC network, which is powered by ESPN.
It's more like BYU's network.
And yes.
Yeah.
And so the Pac-12's inability to get distribution, which, by the way, I do think is one of the smart Jim Phillips arguments that he has, is we have full national distribution of the ACC network.
Right.
And I go back to the addition of USC and UCLA because SEC Network's Cole Kublik actually shared this information. I'm going to trust that it came from a good source. The payout in the Los Angeles market was at 50 cents per household.
It's not bad.
Prior to the addition of USC and UCLA, went up to $1.50 per house.
Oh, for the Big Ten network. Oh, yes. That's why they added – now, these numbers go back, 8 years now when they added Maryland and Rutgers. The number at that point for Big Ten network in the D.C. market and the New York market was like 20 cents per subscriber. It went to 90 cents. This is back then.
Right.
For when in those markets when Maryland and Rutgers came on board.
So step one is for the ACC to get national distribution.
Right.
Step two would be the addition of those schools to the network as a place where you can go and find Pac-12 sports will drive up the value of that ACC network subscriber cost in the Pac-12 footprint. So again, how does that trickle all the way down to increasing the per school per year basis? It doesn't get you anywhere close to the $40 million gap that is being projected 5-10 years into the future, but it changes the bottom line enough that I think it shows an effort to address the needs of the programs that want to keep up at the top of the sport.
Jim Phillips also talked about grant of rights, and he used the example of Texas and Oklahoma having challenged it to get out early, Southern Cal and UCLA having challenged it to get out early, as an example of, let's just say, Clemson, Miami, Florida State not lawyering up to try to get out early. That doesn't mean they won't try to get out at some point, but did you read that as he's pretty confident that grant of rights is binding?
I read that as he recognized, he said, that's a very good point. And he said, everything is on the table.
Sure.
And it was almost as if he was like, come on, 14 years from now? Do you even think we're going to be playing football 14 years from now? Like, do you think
we might just be playing flag football?
I mean, right. There's a very real, like, why are you freaking out about what it's going to look like in the mid-2030s? We don't know anything.
Right.
I mean, the Texas could secede from the union. How are we even going to play non-conference games in another country? I feel like there's just the ACC is looking at the next 5 years and saying, you know, we are prepared to stay intact. We are confident that we can navigate the next 5 years. We can't right now predict what it's going to look like in the mid-2030s. On the outside, we are saying, look at the way this projects out into the 2030s. The ACC is going to be totally lapped, left behind.
Oh, sure.
Whatever you want to say. And so I do think that he is confident the Grant of Rights will hold up for the next 5 years. I think that he believes that there might be an entirely new contractual situation by the time we get to 2036.
Yeah.
He might even be like, you think I'm going to be here in 2030? I mean, realistically.
This is for somebody else to worry about.
This is for somebody else to worry about. So he seemed to acknowledge that the chances that the ACC will exist in its current contract with its current membership all the way through 2036, like, you can't bet on that. There are not good odds that that's going to be the case. But can you get through the next 4 to 5 years right now? They do seem pretty confident about that.
It looks to me like if you wanted to buy your way out at the end of the contract, that's the time to do it.
Correct.
So, you know, the ACC's
like
probably
Texas
got...
Texas and Oklahoma are doing. Like USC and UCLA are doing. They're going to wait till there's a couple years left, and then go. It's more manageable.
Right. And so the ACC probably has 10 years to worry before Clemson, again, they're not. I'm not saying they're going to do this, but it'll be like 2032 when the Tigers announce we're jumping to the SEC. But that's a long way off,
right?
So we don't have to worry about it yet.
So can the ACC? Like, this was the other position that I thought was very interesting from the commissioner. He seems to be fighting as, and this is my words here, like a voice for the voiceless in college athletics. He seems to be saying all of the things that university presidents,
right,
everything that academics want to say. He seems to be trying to be a leader against the professionalization of college football and the efforts to make this wholly an entertainment product. He sounds like a politician in the Senate who's describing why they are going to be one of the losing votes for some sort of legislation that is going to pass.
No question.
Because it seems like a runaway train that we are moving towards semi-professionalization at the very minimum of high-level college football.
It's pro sports.
An entertainment product is exactly the way it's being treated.
Yes.
And conference realignment and the sport as a whole, from where the money comes from, is being decided by big entertainment companies.
Fortune 500. That's what we're dealing with.
He's fighting a noble cause, and is there any expense to him paying all this lip service and being at the front of this noble cause to preserve the college athletic system that has existed for decades?
I mean, it just makes you open to the joke. I mean, you like, people are like, oh, that's adorable. Like, though, we want healthy communities. I get it. It's why I joked about Head Start and, you know,
didn't the gated neighborhoods thing, you know, it sounded good when he wrote
it didn't hit. No, it didn't hit right.
Yeah.
That's not the way I would go.
I looked over at Bud Elliott and I was like, you know that when he wrote it, he was like, nice. We want all communities, not just gated neighborhoods. You know what the problem is? Gated neighborhoods are aspirational. You know who people want to live in gated neighborhoods? People who live next to gated neighborhoods.
Right.
People who got to drive by gated neighborhoods and aren't living in gated neighborhoods. And it came from a very earnest position, I think. Good try.
It was a good try.
But that one broke the other way.
Final thing, this is about Notre Dame, and then we'll let Chip Patterson go back to work. He said he was confident that if the time comes, and he has, I don't know if he said specifically that he has tried to convince Notre Dame to join the league. He's a Notre Dame guy. But when the time comes, he believes that if Notre Dame chooses to join a league, it will be the ACC, and that's the contract. So he could be just saying, this is what the contract says. Notre Dame could do what they want.
Right.
What did you make of that? To me, it's that Notre Dame's about to sign a $75 million yearly deal, and they don't have to do anything unless it's tied to playoff access.
Right. I think that he is speaking from a position, like you said, he's going to lean on the contract, but he also probably knows that I think Notre Dame's going to stay independent.
Probably. For the time being, again, unless their better way into a playoff is through a league, unless we get to that point, then I think you're right. How much money do you think Notre Dame has been leaving on the table for the last 15 years?
And been fine with it, right?
Yeah, they willingly do that.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know that they'd be like the deal that they're seeking is, according to what I read on CBSSports.com, was $75 million annually. Now, NBC is looking for shoulder programming. What if that shoulder programming was ACC programming?
Oh, and NBC got involved?
Yeah. If ESPN said, hey, there's a bunch of these games that we farm out to RSNs or the internet.
Well, and the future of RSNs is also an interesting proposition in terms of what
their distribution is terrible.
Right.
The RSNs.
I think that Notre Dame ultimately loves having this leverage.
Oh.
And they're just going to sit back and enjoy. Yeah, no, they're just going to sit back and enjoy this leverage here for just a little bit. And I wouldn't be surprised if when we really start to get back to the college football expansion conversation, we might see automatic qualifiers start to drift off the table.
I've been saying this for years.
ACC, like the ACC and the Big 12 and the Pac 12, and certainly the Group of Five, which has already been doing this as somebody who gets paid from the college football right. playoff contract, they might vote in favor of a system that gives them the slimmest
right.
of opportunities to go and compete. I don't think Notre Dame would be facing the slimmest of opportunities all at large situation.
That's what I think it should be.
12 best teams.
That's all. Whatever the number is. I've said this since the start. I said it when we went to four. I'm like, I don't care who the four are. I don't care if they're all four from the SEC West. It doesn't matter to me. If we're going to have a playoff, put the four best teams in it.
I mean, isn't Greg Sankey talking about even eliminating automatic bids from the NCAA tournament?
It's like the basketball tournament.
Yes. Like there is a movement.
Well, you can't do that. You would never have the lower leagues in it.
How much do you want to keep everybody under one umbrella and keep us from breaking away? What is the trade-off? Is the trade-off that you get to be a part of the NCAA tournament system and Division I men's college basketball, but you are no longer promised automatic bids into the tournament?
I don't know that it would be. I mean, everything is the tournament for them.
Right.
For the smaller leagues. Everything is the tournament and getting your championship game on ESPN. That's what they don't make money otherwise.
Could they still make money as, because so for example, the Group of Five has been paid out every single year that the college football playoff sure. has existed. Only once last year did Cincinnati actually show up.
Right.
The idea of the one unit that you get for showing up and like the one unit that you get in the NCAA basketball tournament minimum for getting your conference champion in there. What if there's a playoff-like payout structure that allows the same way that the Sun Belt and the MAC and all these other conferences have gotten checks from the college football playoff despite having zero college football playoff representation? What if these other conferences are getting checks from the NCAA basketball tournament cut without any representation? And all of it just gets a 9-10 Rutgers team into the NCAA tournament.
All right, we'll let you go. I'll talk to you later. Chip Patterson, you're the best, man.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.